This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt and Brett here today. As a matter of fact, jam-packed. Got Steiner. We'll get to the Steiner a little bit later on. Also, Jack Rice going to join us. A few legal stories we want to go on over. That'll be in the 5 o'clock hour. But is it just me or do I look a little blurry?
Yeah, we were talking about that.
We do the live stream. For some reason, they just... I work in radio. You know why I don't work in TV? Because I work in radio. That's why. But for some reason in this day and age, everyone wants to watch you. Hi. And so we do the live stream. If you do want to watch the show, you can go to Facebook onto am950radio.com. Watch the live stream there. Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show as well on Facebook. And... Bon appetit. It's like getting an Arby's. Anyway, but it's blurry a little bit, huh?
Yeah, if you're watching on Facebook, comment if you think Matt looks blurry. To me, on my screen, it does, but maybe
now,
it looks clear over
clarify,
there.
Let's clarify, not pasty. Pasty, slightly bloated, drowned. Yes, okay, I can look like a lot of those things, but do I look blurry?
Does Matt look blurry?
Does he look Scottish to you? Yes, he does.
Does it look like we're having him in the witness protection program?
Yeah, they wore kilts because they didn't really have to worry about it. It was Scotland. I mean, never mind. You know what it could be, though? I got vaccinated. You know that. And ever since then, metal's been sticking to me. Oh, well, actually, not really.
Oh, the paperclip kind of stuck to your head there. So
well,
I think.
Oh, my God.
I think we have proof.
Oh, my God.
There's our new YouTube video, proof in capital letters.
Who would be faking this? What kind of idiot would try to put this on there? As there it is.
There it's stuck. There we go.
In case you're wondering what I'm talking about, let's turn to the state we could probably forget, Ohio. Hey, nurses, riddle me this demonstration on an anti-vaccine conspiracy theory fell apart in the Ohio legislative session. By the way, I don't need to be putting paper clips against my forehead.
That needs to be a daily segment. Matt tries to
what
hit paper clips.
What sticks to Matt today?
What sticks to Matt today?
Come here, Patrick. No, don't move. That's going to be a talk with the manager. All righty. The nurse attempted to prove on Tuesday at the Ohio House Health Committee that the coronavirus vaccine causes recipients to become magnetized. As Dr. Sherry Tenpenny testified early in the day in favor of House Bill 248 that would prevent businesses or government agencies to require vaccinations. Now, I want to make sure we understand something. This total moron is a doctor. Wow. Here she comes. The doctor did. This was a nurse. This is the nurse testifying. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Early, forgive me, let me make sure I clarify that. Dr. Tenpenny was the expert. This is the nurse. Yes, vaccines do harm people, the nurse testified, as flagged by the Ohio Capital Journal's Tyler Buchanan. By the way, I just found out something when I was on lunch, and I want to show it to you. We were talking about Dr. Tenpenny's testimony about magnetic vaccine crystals. So this is what I found out. I have a key and a bobby pin here, she said, pressing the key against her chest until it sticks. Explain to me here why the key sticks to me. It sticks to my neck, too. The key, basically, by the way, if you watch the video, does not stick to her neck. It actually just falls fairly quickly away from her body. I mean, there, you know, that, yeah. After several attempts to get the key to stick to her, then she goes with the much lighter bobby pin. So can someone explain to me? That would be great, she says, as the bobby pin falls away from her skin after a moment. Any questions? By the way, just in a little Matt's Science Corner, small items. Small items will indeed briefly stick to the skin due to a waxy sebum that mammals secrete from their glands, not necessarily proof the vaccines contain magnetic crystals.
I think the magnetic fields could be messing up the camera.
Okay, can I ask you something? You know, it could be, you know, that, or it's that Wi-Fi connection to Jeff Bezos. You know, he's got the rocket, his strangely phallic rocket, and it is. I mean, that's the ambiguously gay duo there. I don't know what you're doing with that car, but that is, yeah. He's got his rocket. He's out in space. He's controlling my body through the vaccines. Mind you, follow how I'm going here. Jeff Bezos. So it could be the Wi-Fi connection from his phallic rocket ship to me disturbing the camera here in the studio and making things slightly stick to me.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Oh, chaos. Chaos. Mind you, a key might stick to my forehead, but I don't get coronavirus. I'm kind of okay with that trade-off, you know? It won't.
You'll never lose your keys.
Where's my car key? Oh, here it is.
Yeah, what's she complaining about? This is a benefit.
That's the greatest idea ever. You will never lose your car keys again. Obviously, it makes it kind of easy for you to get robbed, but I mean,
I could use that for my TV remote. I wonder if that could stick to my head. I never lose that.
Wouldn't it be great? Seriously, you got the game on. You got your cell phone over here. You got your hands open for chips and dip. You're great. This actually is a precursor to probably a little bit of a longer discussion we should have over something I'm going to get in with Stein here when we are at the bottom of the hour. God, that's the stupidest people. The Republican Party is in trouble. And here's what I'm saying by this is that, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of people. 70 plus million people looked at Donald Trump and said, he deserves another chance. Seriously? Morons. Seriously. And I don't have any problem. I'm not here to make you feel better. I'm not here to validate your stupidity. No. Dumb. When a Democrat, it's funny when I talk to people who are Democrats who are thinking about running in the DFL. These are kind of the conversations that I have, where it'll be, you know, I've got a master's degree. I worked in my field for 20 years. I'm a business owner. I've got a mid-sized business that's been successful. I've raised a family. I've had success and all this. But you know what? I mean, I'm a leader in my church. I'm a leader in my civic organization. But geez, I just don't know if that translates into enough, you know, to have, you know, to be a candidate to represent people. I mean, there's this introspective when it comes to the DFL candidates, where they really sit down and say, because I mean, I've been asked to run occasionally, and personally, I'm just going to let you know, just my personal thing. No, I'm not. I mean, I don't want to be in the House. I don't want to be in the Senate. I don't want to be in an office. I might run for something like school board at some point, something local where I feel like I'm helping locally. Which I highly encourage. I don't care what your political party is. Get involved in your local politics, your city council, planning and zoning, parks and rec. Get involved. It's a great opportunity for you to have a good impact on your local community and have your voice heard. And it's good. And of course, education, school board, by all means. But I'm not going to run because I do not feel as if that I could tackle that responsibility. Because I think there is a responsibility. You're representing tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands of people. And your decisions are going to impact those people every day. I mean, that's an important thing. And that's when you talk to DFL potential candidates, there's this understanding of the brevity of the decision. The Republicans aren't like that. The Republicans right now are running to who can grunt loudest. As a matter of fact, this is my idea of the standard debate that goes on right now within GOP candidates. Yeah, that guy over there wet himself. And yeah, he's eating a tub of paste. And yeah, he's spouting gibberish about the Jewish space lasers. And he's racist as all get-go. But that guy over there, he does all that too. And he's drooling. Oh, he's the guy I want for candidate. And if you think I'm joking about that, today, today, Lauren Boebert, the representative from Colorado, paste eater, wedding pants, pseudo-racist, and I'll go with drooling. Why not?
I don't know if I'd even say pseudo-racist.
I think I'm giving her more benefit than she She tried to go after, I think it was one of Biden's budget of office management people, and said, why have we handed the border over to the cartels? And the woman tried to say, okay, I'm not going to do this. And finally, the woman just looked at her and said, your question assumes something that's just not real. I'm not going to answer it. But if you want to talk about this, I said my time. I'm done. And she was just there because Lauren Boebert is basically the modern equivalent of a paste-eating, pants-wetting moron. But you see, that's morality and dignity and integrity within the Republican Party today. Louis Gohmert today made the question, seriously, questioned whether or not the Forest Service could alter the change of the planet's orbit or the moon's orbit. Now, I'm not sure. I remember I was in the hospital for a few days there, Brett. Do we have forests on the moon now? Is it Endor up there? Are there Ewoks running all over the place on our space debris that we left up there? Get those things off there. Get like a gutter guard. Get the Ewoks off our space. Are there forests on the moon now?
You're just asking questions. There could be. We don't know.
Is there brain in Louis Gohmert's head? No. That's and there, by the way, you know, Steve King, Louis Gohmert, I mean, there is the king of paste-eating, pants-wetting, pseudo-racist, grunting drool machine wearing their pants backwards. Got a little... Gotta throw that in there. Sorry, I'm not gonna let that go. You know, your keys stuck to your head prior to the vaccine. I'm just gonna say it. Your keys were sticking to your forehead a long time ago. You make the banjo player from Deliverance look like a merit scholar. It's, you know, it's disturbing, but it's not the only one. I mean, this is. It is bizarre to me that we are at a point where we actually have a case here. The Minnesota Supreme Court on Wednesday, and it's not, like I said, it's not just nationally. The Minnesota Supreme Court on Wednesday rejected a holdover lawsuit that was charged in, this is after the last election, where some, and this is, I mean, quite literally the epitome of sore losers. A case from the 2020 election, which challenged a DFL state Senate win, while drawing a line for judicial involvement in scrutinizing certified results. Democratic Jen McEwen, fantastic, by the way, DFL, a good one, won the Duluth area race by a 2-1 margin. Okay? That would seem like a blowout. But that didn't stop idiot Republican Donna Bergstrom from filing an election contest that claimed irregularities. Now, am I calling her an idiot as a person? Not necessarily, but her legal arguments were somewhat taken apart here by the Minnesota Supreme Court. A lower court turned the case aside, and now the state's highest court has too. In an opinion outlining the decision, Chief Justice Lori Gildea wrote that the challenge had technical flaws, contained vague allegations, and failed to justify a deeper ballot inspection. That sounds pretty stupid to me. I mean, you might not be stupid. I don't know. You filed the lawsuit, but your lawsuit was dumb as heck because you took Republican talking points that when you get into your crowds that everyone goes, yay, yay, he's wetting himself, he's eating paste, yay, he's doing all the classics. And you put that into a legal argument, dude, you know, and proverbially, I mean, you know, I'm not saying directly, Brett, this is a satire show. We make jokes, you know. Did you hear me talk about Beezus' rocket? For goodness sake. But, you know, you get the point is that you go in there and they think to themselves, and because it's the stupidest people on the planet. Now, here's what I'll say. And this is, there was a discussion I had years ago in regards to position and respect. And this was when I was back in the military. And there's a sergeant who just, he didn't like the fact that, you know, I didn't bow down to him. Now, I respected his rank. He was a sergeant. He ranked above me. I respected his rank. But I had to look at him and say, sir, Sergeant, with all due respect, I respect your rank. You tell me to do something, I'll do it. But you're demanding I respect you as a person. And I'll give you respect if you deserve respect. But that doesn't come universally. That's not something that just comes. And these Republicans, Boebert and Gohmert and all these other people, they think to themselves, I'm respectable. And they're the dumbest people on the planet. And they come on out there and they think that because they're pretending to be an adult, that it gives what they have to say provenance. And it doesn't. You're just stupid. They had the story I posted earlier today, and I'll repost it again a little bit later on because I'm going to talk about this a little bit with Jack. The interchange down in Albert Lea, the woman had her entire case against the state thrown out. And God bless the judge in that case because he tried his best. I don't want to badmouth you. You seem earnest. You seem nice enough. But part of her argument was the state's keeping documents from us. And the judge pointed out, you didn't even look. There is a data website. There is a document search website the state has that all you had to do was type in the name of the file and you would have had access to all of this. And that was your case, is that they are not giving you access and it's freely available. You just didn't look for it. How is that this not stupid? How is it? How are you just that dumb that you don't say, because you get into that crowd of, he's eating the paste, he's wetting his pants, yay! And you take that and you think, see, they thought I was smart. The Muppet rejects over there thought, I was great. So here I go. Folks, I'm pretty sure your keys won't stick to your head if you get vaccinated. Pretty sure Lauren Boebert's a complete and total Mormon. Louis Gohmert is human. I think it's debatable. I think Sloth from the Goonies is saying, "Who's this guy?" We can't just sit back any longer and say, "Well, that's a nuanced argument, Matt. You're being intolerant if you don't tolerate it." No, it's a bunch of morons going and acting like it's Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And frankly, we all should be done with it. So if you see it, point it out and say, "Wow, you're stupid." You'll win. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Speaking of stupid, Tori Westrum, when I do come on back, this senator. Oh, God, you're not going to believe what these Republicans are trying to do now. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Stay cool out there. Very hot. Once again, 95, is it right now? Did that break another record? I don't know.
It's got to be close.
It's got to be close. I think the 95 is the record for the day. Let me check. They got 95, yeah. We might have tied it.
Tomorrow's supposed to be hotter, like 97.
Just delightful.
Yeah.
Just delightful. 952-946-6205. So a few weeks ago, I had a conversation with someone who came in, was a conservative, and came in and talked to me about something and is saying, oh, and I said, well, I'm a liberal progressive, but I'm also a Catholic. And he looks at me and goes, oh, so you're a cafeteria Catholic. To which I just did one of these. And he looked at me and he got wide-eyed and intense. And I said, you're calling me a cafeteria Catholic? Hey, let's go read the book of Matthew. Oh, that didn't go over well. And when he said, one of those, I said, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, the four gospels of the Bible that make Christians Christian, you completely ignore one of them. But tell me more about Timothy and Leviticus. Oh, boy. And by the way, you ignore a lot of Leviticus, too. As long as it's only stuff that validates your opinion that you follow. So you're a far worse cafeteria Catholic than I am, needless to say. But, you know, my personal opinion, once again, religious disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I'm Catholic, and I think everyone's individual relationship with their God is their individual relationship with God. Good luck. If you want one, you don't have to. It's you. Do what you want to do. You see, why do I bring that up? Well, Tori Westrum. Now, Tori Westrom is a Minnesota State Senator and kind of a jerk, if you ask me. I just opinion and paying attention to the guy. Not exactly a nice fellow. And he seems to be behind. Of course, now we have Ingebrigtsen trying to kill clean cars, which has nothing to do with the environmental bill, and is trying to torpedo the environmental bill. We went over earlier this week, Mary Kiffmeyer trying to destroy the Minnesota Historical Society because, God forbid, the Historical Society actually recognize anything but white conqueror history. And so today we have our latest example of Republicans just being jerks. But what makes this interesting is that Senator Westrom, if you go to his campaign website, he talks about his evangelical faith. He goes to church. Do you? Do you? Because I can tell you one thing. I don't think you're paying attention too much because you're kind of missing some points. The program, this guy is in charge of the ag bill. The program he is determined to kill, he is determined to kill, is the Market Bucks program. What this does is it allows people in the state to take their SNAP benefits and spend them at a farmer's market so that they get fresh fruit and vegetables. The farmer gets paid. The hungry that need help get good quality food. Win-win. I have talked about this program. As a matter of fact, I have often referred to the first time I talked to Governor Walz back when he was in Minnesota 1, and Governor Walz gave on my show the greatest answer in regards to why that SNAP program needs to work, because my God, if that isn't one of the best programs, you pay the farmer gets paid, people that are hungry get food, good quality Minnesota food. It is a win-win. And in this day and age, when you have so many people that are hungry and in need, which there are, that basically that is a great program. I mean, that's a fantastic program. And I'm reading from Facebook posts over from the St. Paul Farmers Market. The Market Bucks program is in jeopardy. It very well may be canceled. Minnesota State Senator Westrom is the committee chair leading efforts to dismantle the program. Please take a minute to contact him and your state reps to share your story of how Market Bucks helps your family. Market Bucks is a program that incentivizes SNAP recipients to use their benefits to purchase healthy foods at farmers markets by providing matching funds. It's a government program that is effective, reaches its goal in increasing access to healthy food for low-income families, and supports local farmers. How in the world are you against this? They go on a different post, and I'll post both of these up a little bit later on. We need participation to lead the. We need your participation to lead the program in local markets as it's going to be closed. Help save money for markets. Contact your full-time representative. Ask them to leave the program. This is a very successful program for low-income people who buy healthy local food in markets. So this is really a no-brainer. But leave it to old no-brain Tori Westrom to basically say he wants to kill it. I'll just call you out on your Christian face because you're a fraud. If you're a Christian and you're against this program, you're a fraud. You are a fraud, sir. State Senator, you're a fraud. Because I can tell you right now, Jesus didn't go, well, yeah, I like feeding people, but, you know, that's some federal dollars and there's state funds. And, you know, the money's more important than the hungry people. So you're a fraud. I'll call you out in religion. I'm a Catholic. I can do that. I have no problem doing that. But that being said, how are you that stupid to be in charge of the Ag Committee to not understand making sure local people that need food can get quality food from local Minnesota farmers where the farmers are getting paid? And you think that program has to be killed? You're an idiot. Seriously, I'm done. I'm done. I'm not candy coating it anymore. That's just dumb. That's just dumb.
It's mean.
It is. It's mean. And you know what? I mean, I have a feeling that Tory is just sitting there saying, oh, I know who we're going to get. We're going to go get those inner city people. Just stupid. Think of your farmers. Think of the farmers. If anything shows you that these people just don't even care about the people they supposedly represent, it's stuff like this. Because how can you look at your local farmers and say, you know, hey, I want to make sure you get paid for your product, but I'm just, you know, no, we'll not do it. And what do you think? That grand markup on that apple is going to be what? 4 cents? 5 cents? That's going to be the deal breaker? They're going to get paid. People, hungry people get food. It's a good Christian policy, in my opinion, once again, my religion, but it's also just dang good policy. But as we've seen over and over again, good policy is something that Republicans like to kill. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come back. Stein, when we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Spiritual thoughts, spiritual life.
Jeff. Jeff.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. Noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. Iowa Business Report is his show that he does down in Iowa. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report. He comes to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
It feels like we've walked into a piano bar when this segment begins, doesn't it?
Not a good one either, you know? Kind of stinks, stale beer, that sort of thing.
With the huge tip jar that the piano player himself or herself threw a dollar in just hopes that there'd be a bandwagon effect, and it never works.
Just hopes that it's not another Billy Joel song, you know? It's like, okay, anything else? Anyone else? Okay, Piano Man it is. Here we go, kids.
I've never gotten that request before.
Jeff, now I want to make sure I do mention, of course, you do have a lot of shows down there. I know you were pumping out the Iowa Business the Iowa Business Report. That's one you do down there. Just a really quick one. Why don't you give an update on the last one you did on that was?
The weekday edition, there's actually a weekend and a weekday edition because the audience says, we just don't get enough of him on the radio. But today's edition had to do with the Midwest economy and the idea that commodity prices are good. Unemployment is low, relatively speaking, and that might be good for the Midwest.
And, you know, one thing we don't talk about, and I brought this up yesterday with a story out of a Duluth hotel. Mm-hmm. As much as people want to lament that $300 extra people are getting and saying, oh, it's stopping people from taking, you know, $10 an hour cleaning hotel jobs. Yeah, wonder what that's all about. But the reality is when the hotel says, we're really busy, we're really booked. Well, part of the reason why is people got $300 and they've got actually discretionary income. And that across the country, it doesn't matter where you're at. That is helping a lot of places. There are people who are talking about whether it purchases, larger purchases. There's more durable goods that are being picked up right now, more vacations being taken because that money is there. And the upper Midwest is really taking advantage of it because I think for a while there, they just didn't have that discretionary income.
Well, and let's put some of this into context because, for example, what we're talking about here is this additional $300 a week provided by the federal government to those who qualify for state unemployment, provided your state plays along.
Yes.
And many states are now absenting themselves from that. All right, here's the thing. If, in fact, it is true, and it is to some degree, it is not measurable, but it is true to some degree that there are certain people who say, you know what, I'm going to make more on unemployment, so why wouldn't I do that? That is not necessarily, Matt, a flaw of the governmental system.
Exactly. Exactly.
It is leading businesses to come to the table, for example. Now, again, I'm in Iowa. And I think the cost of living is relatively the same, but not as much as the cities. It costs more to live up there.
Yep.
That's just the case. So I go to a Quick Star, and there's a big sign on the door that says $12.07 per hour starting wage. It wasn't that long ago that they had just moved to 10, okay? And then it says $500 signing bonus. That's a week's pay. All right, so when the convenience stores are at $12 and $15 an hour, you've got these municipal pools that don't have enough lifeguards, so they're going to have to offer kids $12 and $15 an hour. They're Tyson, which, of course, has its own issues, but in this area, they need 20 manufacturing maintenance workers. So I think that's more than just working the kill floor. It's more than cleaning the kill floor. There is a level of skill in terms of mechanical, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They're offering $4,000 signing bonuses because they need these people. And so what it's doing is it's saying, okay, look, if Matt McNeil can make more money sitting at home on unemployment, then we need to do something to right-size the system, and it's not deprive Matt McNeil of $300 a week.
I think part of this, too, I mean, there is clearly the minimum wage just did not keep up with inflation. And no. And if we, what we went through in the last year was tragic, and it created necessity. And even with, go with the moderate Republicans, a lot of moderate Republicans are like, yeah, we got to do something here, whether it was business aid or aid directly to families. And sure. And I think that once, one thing you and I will both agree on is, once you start making the moves in these directions, it, unless there's a major collapse in the governmental system, it's not going backwards. And so this is going to be kind of going forward, this new normal. And in the end run, you're right. You know, businesses might have to raise the price of a burger or the price of a dress or something like that. But the reality is, people are getting paid more. That gets more discretionary income. And the system works better. And I think that at the end of the day, it's just basically a correction, a long overdue correction, still probably going a little slower than I'd like, but it's just a correction that's going to happen, and it likely is not going to go back.
Here is the problem, and it's a gap, if you will. Maybe gap's not the right phrase, but let's say, and I have no problem saying it because we advertise it. I think we pay at this radio station, we pay part-time folks like $10 an hour. And after they've worked their way up, maybe they're making $15 an hour. Now, that's not $30,000 a year, by the way. I think $17 an hour gets you to $35,000 a year. We're doing some hiring, so I have these numbers front of mind, okay? It's not like I just memorized this stuff. But let's say you're talking about $15 an hour for someone who has some experience. What happens when the minimum wage goes up to $15 an hour, as many have talked about?
Yeah.
Well, if you are already making 15, don't you anticipate making more? Obviously, right? Because you were making X percent more than minimum wage. Well, if minimum wage goes up, don't you think yours should go up? The fear is, well, all I'm saying is the fear is that the businesses are going to say, we can't afford to do that. And so you're going to have certain people be raised up a bit. Others may say, well, now where's mine? And that's a potential issue.
Well, and I think to a point, you're right. I mean, obviously, I think you're right that there would be a natural increase. But at the same time, I don't know if it necessarily is a guarantee. But I will say this is in the kind of the same sense of the business when the Affordable Care Act and the Obamacare came out. I mean, how many people, I mean, that's been around now for 11 years. And mm-hmm. It actually has more people under it now than it ever has. And reminder, when that started, everyone's saying it's going to bankrupt the system. There's not going to be any health care for anyone. It's going to be a horrible situation. No one's going to be able to choose their doctors. None of that came true. And the end result is that we actually have far more people insured in this country than we had before. And that's a good thing because filling in those gaps does actually make a more streamlined system and actually a more affordable system. And so, yeah, I'm not saying there aren't problems. I'm not saying there aren't glitches. But at the same time, these things do change, and it's just what amazes me is how much pressure has been put on in the last few decades that have kept these things from changing, happening on their own. And it took really a weird quirk of the pandemic that was what was the motivator to actually bring wages and the economic stimulus and the inflation question into pay back into the fold.
It is so interesting, Matt, that the pandemic exposed so many things.
Yeah,
the fragile nature of the supply chain.
Yes.
The definition of what essential workers are and how greedy businesses might take advantage of human beings, subjecting them to illness and death.
Why rural hospitals should not be part of a nickel and diming to the lowest common denominator thing. That was also exposed.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the story is about rural health.
My goodness.
And, you know, when I've talked to people, as you have, but when I've talked to people and I say, look, just explain to me, why is it that you can't make it? And then they explain the reimbursement rate. It's like, well, there's no way the math works on this. Here's something I'm just going to throw out here. It's sort of like rolling a grenade into the middle of the room and seeing what happens. Because I don't really subscribe to this theory, but I think it's an interesting thing based upon what we're seeing now in terms of these businesses who can't find people. So what are they doing? They're raising the pay. So that's sort of a capitalistic thing. There are some who are now saying, you know what? Maybe we should not have a minimum wage because of, and I have some real problems with that, but I'm just laying it out there as a principle that if you don't have a minimum wage, then you're going to have people competing for workers. there's something, there's a middle ground in here, okay? Because otherwise you're going to have some people taking advantage of folks who really, really can't speak for themselves.
But the concept of,
you know, we talk a lot about minimum wage, but the reality is we're talking about paying, some of these jobs are paying double minimum wage because they can't get enough workers. Okay, so that's really more a function of workers leveraging their power to get what they think they deserve, they should get. And I don't know that that's a bad thing.
The problem with that is that the country does not work universally. What's going on in Seattle is not going on in Miami or in Lubbock, Texas, or for anything. And the reality is that you get into these tourist communities and they can really hold down wages. And that's something you see in Texas, you see in Florida. Here's my, one of the things I brought up when these states started canceling the $300 is that Republicans for years have made the argument that these jobs were only supposed to be stepping stone jobs. These were jobs that you were supposed to get to go to something else. And that the minute all of a sudden people didn't come back to those jobs because whether it was they're staying for $300 or people were offering them more money, the Republican stance was no, make their life worse by taking the $300 away and try to force them back into those jobs. And that's not the free market. That's basically a, to a point, a controlled workforce. And I think, like I said, and it doesn't surprise me that you're starting to hear people talking about, once again, the minimum wage getting abolished, because the reality is once, as we said, once you start going down this path, unless you have a major fundamental change, you're not going to go backwards. And about the only option that's left for them to stop people from getting the, you know, because corporations and businesses have to offer this, is to maybe get away with saying, well, you no longer have to work with this, so work with your local community and see if you can keep those wages down. That's about the only option that's left on the table.
Because of the nature of the republic, right, and the cost of living being different in different places, you could arguably have different minimum wages state by state. Now, that's, again, because of what you just—
interstate commerce stuff, yeah.
Well, but what you mentioned was in the tourism industry, these states over here might take advantage of the situation and have an artificially low minimum wage. One of the things that the problem of trying to treat everybody the same, and I don't have an answer for it. I'm just telling you a story. Most federal jobs, if not all federal jobs, are classified, as in it's level 2, level 7, whatever it is, and there is a pay rate. And your pay changes only because of seniority. So I'll tell you a story about the presidential library system. And this is something that, well, it's a story that happened to me. I was asked to apply to be the director of a presidential library.
Hoover?
It was Hoover.
Yes.
It was. Okay. Which is in Iowa. And it's so people I know, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, would you apply? And I said, well, you know, what the heck? There aren't that many of them. Sure. And I was one of the two finalists. And then, cooler heads prevailed and they hired somebody who, wait for it, had actually done this before. And so, so I got a free trip to Washington and I flew home. But here was the thing that I found interesting about the experience. The pay rate for West Branch, Iowa, which is a tiny, tiny town near Iowa City, the pay rate to run a presidential library and museum was the same there as the one to run the LBJ Library in Austin, Texas, or the Reagan Library, or any of these federal national archive-controlled presidential libraries, because it was the same job classification. Now, I can tell you the cost of living in Iowa, West Branch, Iowa in particular, is a lot different than Ann Arbor, Michigan, is a lot different than
Independence, Missouri.
Sure, because might as well say Kansas City.
Yeah.
So to me, if you're running the Iowa facility, you're making out like a bandit in terms of quality of life because they wanted to treat everybody the same.
Well, you're making out like a bandit in pay.
Yeah.
And trust me, I lived in Iowa multiple times. It's beautiful down there. There's a lot of great things down there, but it's a wildly different experience in Minneapolis or Kansas City or anything else. And so you have to take, you know, with any place in this country, good with the bad. And so I understand what you're saying. I'm going to guess with those GS jobs, government service jobs, GS jobs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that's my whole point is that I look at the salary going, you're going to pay how much? But then when you realize that in Hyde Park, New York, you're a pauper.
Yes,
okay.
So, exactly.
So this has led me over the course of the 10 years since this came up. I've thought about it, right? It's like, all right, how do you, if you will, right size the wages? I don't have a good answer. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about it, but you see where sometimes the one size fits all is problematic.
If you're running a presidential library, I think you get paid what you get paid. In the same sense as you run a good quality museum or a zoo or, I think you get paid what you get paid. So I don't know if it's that big of a deal. I will say this. You sure had your eyes on the big paycheck there, didn't you?
I was going for cash. Are you nuts? Of course I'm going for cash. Because what was I doing? I was teaching at colleges, and now I'm doing radio. And if you combine multiple years of income, it might have...
You look like the Monopoly guy out in front of the Hoover Library. Hey, hello there. Welcome, kiddos. Let me tell you about my world.
Let me look through my monocle here. And if you need to take a nap, you just go into the birthplace cottage and lay down. I mean, it was...
Here's the deal. We got to take a break. You and I could actually do a financial economics show for sure. I find that topic somewhat fascinating. When we come back, I want to actually ask you about one really big problem for Republicans as they get in towards 2022. Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his weekly visit. Okay, Jeff, here is, there is something that I know you, whenever I talk Trump, you said, he's in your head. No, it's not. I'm looking at this politically analysis. There is something that's starting to, and you and I both have these same feelings, that this is a problem spot if you're looking at Republicans. Stepping back and looking at this, there are a lot of Republicans that are very angry about 1-6, and they do not like the idea of that being swept under the rug. There's a lot of Republicans that watch people go into an Ohio legislative thing and saying vaccinations make keys stick to your forehead and just roll their eyes. And as Trump is coming back more and more into the Republican realm, the more extremist howler monkey side of the Republican Party is getting much more attention.
Yeah.
And the reality is this, the problem, here's the trap. Biden's not screwing up like they want him to. And Biden is actually, his numbers still with moderate Republicans is very good. And the country is changing. As a matter of fact, I saw the legalized gay marriage. 70% of the country wants it. A majority of Republicans are okay with legalized gay marriage. The country is changing. If they are going to try to hold on to these old tropes and push this really Trump narrative, they've got to have some sort of winning strategy that says it was better back then. And right now, that's just not materializing. And the longer this keeps kind of going down these extreme levels, the more I'm starting to wonder is the real danger for the Republicans this embracing of Trump to where when they get into that next year, their candidates are across the board? Because let's face it, the process for Republicans goes really generally to the most extreme candidates. And if that's what's on the ticket, that's going to cause them a lot of problems in the Senate, in the House, and nationwide.
And I know we only have probably about 3 minutes. So Senator Charles Grassley is, I think, 87 years old now. He's up for re-election next year. He's from Iowa. I talk with him on a monthly basis for my radio program. He has not announced if he's running in 2022. I asked him Monday, given that President Trump is speaking again, he had just been at the North Carolina Republican Convention. I said, is he the leader of the Republican Party? Grassley had a very measured answer. He said, we will not have a leader of the Republican Party until we nominate our presidential candidate in 2024. And if that person wins, they'll be the leader for 5 years, meaning the term in office plus the election. If they lose, then we'll be in the same position we are in now. Then he said, we have 50 Republican parties. We do not have one Republican Party. Now, that I found fascinating for someone who was president pro tem, took over for Mike Pence at the podium as Pence was ushered out of the Capitol, and then soon after he himself was hustled to a secure location miles away underground. So what I sensed in that was a distancing from Trump as he considers whether he's going to run for another term. He is very clearly saying there is no leader of the Republican Party. That's a fascinating statement for someone who carried an awful lot of water for that president for 4 years.
Really quick, but isn't that part of the problem? That if they pointed to, I'll just say Mike Pence. Mike Pence is the leader. Then at least you have a counterpoint, because the lack of an endorsement leaves that door even wider open for Trump.
Well, of course it does. But what it does is, how many of these folks would say, well, yes, Donald Trump is the leader of our party. Look at the reaction he gets. There's a lot of people lining up behind that narrative. And the fact that you've got somebody who's actually going to be on the ballot next year saying there is no leader, I thought that was a pretty big movement. Now, you're right. If you said, well, it's Mike Pence, it's Mike Pompeo, it's Kristi Noem, all these people who are coming to Iowa next month for an event, by the way. I mean, you know, this is
eye roll.
I could hear it. I could hear it. No, they're getting ready, right? And then Trump is saying, well, I'll have news for 2024. You'll be very pleased, blah, 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 blah. But when you get somebody like Grassley who says, we have no leader of our party, it's like, wow, okay, thank you, sir. I didn't know what to make of that, other than positioning for possible reelection.
Very interesting comments. What I also will say is this: the Republican Party can't become Jets fans, because Jets fans convince themselves every year they're going to win the Super Bowl, and then they play their first game. And if all you do is surround yourself with Jets fans, the Jets are the greatest team of all time, and then reality smacks you back. And they've got to figure out something, because that's going to be a problem. All right, there you go. I got Jeff laughing pretty good. Find all your Jeff Stein needs. Once again, Next Chapter books, great books for Father's Day. Go get them, as well as also NatoliIowa.com. We'll put the Iowa Politics Report up later. Jeff, thank you much. Hour 2 is coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, indeed breaking another record. Sven Sundgaard pointing, we got up to 96 now. Just nuts.
What was the previous record?
95 yesterday. It was 75, 1975.
So we're going to break it tomorrow again.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It's the longest heat streak we've had, and we've never had anything this early in the year. This is really, not good. Am I crazy? There's an eclipse tomorrow morning, right? I think we're supposed to get a little bit of an eclipse tomorrow morning.
Oh, an eclipse. I never heard about that.
Yeah, so there's interstellar bodies. Okay. The sun. Okay. Never mind.
What's this thing? An eclipse.
We're supposed to get partial lunar eclipse, but it's early, like 6 a.m. But the sun should be up. We should see some of
easily,
it.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
So we'll have to. Cool. I got to go walk the dog early tomorrow. So I'm going to go check to see if it's out there. I'll
post a photo of it if you can.
Because I love staring at the eclipses.
Well, Donald Trump does, so clearly it works.
And see what happened to his pants. Come on. I'm not going to. I look bad enough as it is. I don't need to put on the granimals. Jack Rice is kind enough to join us. We got a lot of legal stuff that's actually come up in the last few days. Jack Rice, kind enough to take some time. JackRiceLaw.com. That's JackRiceLaw.com. He's an expert in law enforcement, legal actions, and, of course, intelligence agencies as well. Hey, Jack, how are you, my friend?
It's great to be with you.
Great to have you with us. Hope you're staying cool.
Well, you know what? Like everybody else, I think we're kind of shocked. And yet I still feel sort of guilty about complaining about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you do.
We're waiting for so long. It's like I just feel kind of stupid saying, whoa. But you're like, okay. So I just kind of, we're all just kind of getting through it. It's going to be fine.
I love the meme that's out there. Minnesota, if you don't love us at our winter worst, then you sure don't deserve us at our summer worst.
Yeah, right. Good point.
I want to start off, the Minnesota Supreme Court's going to review the Mohamed Noor case. Of course, Justine Devon shot by Noor. He was convicted. The question here sounds like it's involving whether or not the right sentence was he was convicted of the right charge, I guess it is. And they're asking the Minnesota Supreme Court to step in and take a look at this. What have you heard about that?
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, actually, it was weird at the time, but really we saw it again during the Derek Chauvin trial. And that's that question of whether or not the third degree charge is actually appropriate. And in fact, if you recall, this was a case that during the Chauvin trial, the court kicked that charge too. It went up to the Court of Appeals. They reinstated it and sent it back down. So there really is a lot of question on the charge itself. Essentially, remember now, former officer Noor was convicted of that third degree murder charge as well as that second degree manslaughter charge. They're not appealing the manslaughter conviction. In fact, they're saying essentially he did that. He's guilty of that. We are not appealing it. We're simply appealing this third degree charge. And essentially, what they were arguing was that it simply doesn't apply. Now, if you think about what third degree murder really is, it's essentially, an example would be, I have a depraved mind. I shoot into a crowd of people. I might be trying to kill one guy. Somebody else dies as a result. They're arguing that this isn't how this applied. This was actually the wrong application of the law, and this law simply does not apply. The state pushed back saying, look, it absolutely does. It's a really weird stretch of the law, I can tell you, and I think that there's a possibility that the Supremes may actually agree with the defense in this case because of how they're applying it. He would still go down on the manslaughter charge, but that third-degree charge is just a little wacky.
Is what kind of impact, then, do you think might happen in regards to, would there be an influence on the Chauvin verdict?
Well, in that case, there would be, because, again, that third degree may very well apply. I mean, essentially, the idea that you're trying to kill somebody and you kill somebody else, and the question was, who else was Chauvin trying to kill? Who else was Nord trying to kill? I mean, that's part of the analysis of this, and so in that sense, it may make those charges, those convictions moot, meaning you can't apply them. However, the other ones would still hold up. In the Chauvin case, in fact, that second-degree intentional murder charge, that's going to trump all of these anyway. It's a much more serious conviction. He could go down very, very hard on that, and I expect him to do so. And so I don't think it's going to make any difference at all. On the other hand, in the Noor case, it actually could, because a third-degree murder conviction is more serious, and then you'll find that manslaughter charge. By the way, one other example of that, and this is where we usually see it, is where somebody is a drug dealer and they sell like tainted heroin with fentanyl, and you'll hear about people getting overdoses all the time. That's that depraved mind piece that says, I'm sending this out there to people. I don't care what happens. If they die, they die. Frequently, that's the third degree charge that applies, and it is slightly different than this one.
Now, and obviously, the complexities and the differences between the case. I mean, Chauvin's kneeling on the back of George Floyd's neck.
Right.
In the case of Noor, I mean, it was he got scared by Justin DeMond knocking on the car, and he just shot recklessly across past the other officer and hit her. You mentioned something earlier about third degree, like a person, just a gunman shooting into a crowd looking for one target. So that would, you know, that's kind of an iffy application in this case.
Well, you know, yes. And in fact, I think the way you put it was this idea of a depraved mind. In fact, what Noor's lawyer argued was this was a snap decision. This was something that he made very quickly in a split second, hence guilty of that second degree manslaughter charge. But how do you have a depraved mind if what you do is you get scared based upon a decision that somebody else does, and you automatically shoot? Where's the deprivation? Where's the depraved mind in that case? You can still be guilty of other stuff, but how do you apply that standard to this case, and that maybe this was the wrong charge, the wrong conclusion, and so therefore it should be thrown out?
Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. Jack, let's go to the sentencing in the Chauvin trial. Obviously, the prosecution defense filed their motions. Defense wants probation. That's not going to happen. But where do you think this is going to end up in regards to the amount of time that, just on the charges that he's already been convicted of? How long do you think Derek Chauvin's going to go to the jail for those?
Oh, this is going to get ugly. I know I read both of the motions in this case, so I received copies of both, and we saw this effort for probation. Frankly, you have a second-degree murder conviction, intentional murder conviction, and you have special circumstances because you have a police officer who's not just trained but knowingly does all the things that we saw. And so it's very possible that even if you went with a presumptive commitment of about 25 years, you could see the court actually go up. They could do that. Now, are they going to? It's a real question at this point. But they certainly could, and it's certainly justifiable. Because I think when you watch this trial, I think that it certainly could justify that upward movement. Even within the guidelines themselves, you could see that without a justification. So, to some degree, I expect to see at least that number.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I think that's interesting analysis. That I agree with you. I think the heinousness, and I thought that the prosecution's case was so strong in that trial. How much? And I don't. When it comes to the sentencing, how much does a judge look back on the trial and the case that was made to kind of figure out the amount of time that person's going to serve?
You know, it's a really great question, Matt, because they are human. And what I really think happens is that what somebody who's a defendant, somebody who's convicted of this, they look at how just sort of gut-wrenching it is. Now, usually, what they'll do is they stay right in those guidelines. So there's a pocket that you expect. In Minnesota, there's something called Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines, where what they'll do is they'll look at the seriousness of the charge. That'll be sort of one point on the graph. And then they'll also turn around and look at the record that somebody has. Chauvin didn't have any records, so he will have 0 points. But because of the seriousness of the charge, which is that second-degree murder charge, it still is a substantial point. The term is presumptive commit. In other words, he's going to prison for a long time. However, I think what makes this difference is that when you watched this and you sat there and watched the videotape, it was so gut-wrenchingly horrible to see a police officer kneeling on the neck of a man as he essentially strangles under his weight. When you see that, he felt like a gang member. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This idea of this guy, he's just some guy in the street wearing a certain kind of colors, and he decides he's going to do this. But he does this in our name, collectively in our name. And there's something so horrible about that it drives, I think, me, you, a lot of people to say, this isn't ordinary. This isn't the normal murderer. This is somebody above and beyond even that.
The other three officers, it sounds like their jury selection is actually going to happen beginning the same time next year as the jury selection in the Chauvin trial. You had mentioned the last time, I think we talked, that this is getting out of the way for the federal case, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're going to push this thing beyond that. And I think there's a possibility here, depending upon what happens on the federal side, you're going to see some kind of resolution on the state side. And if that were to happen, you sort of get an understanding on where this is going to go. And it's possible that you're going to get a sort of a global resolution. And in fact, if you look back, you and I talked about this, there was an effort on the Derek Chauvin case for a global resolution previously that he would plead guilty to a certain charge, a certain conviction. He would then go to prison for a certain period of time, but there would also be an understanding about what happens on the federal side. My guess is you're also seeing that very same effort to sort of pull all of the prosecutors in a room and say, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? How do we figure this out? How do we collectively come up to an answer? I have cases right now with multiple jurisdictions, multiple prosecutors, and I'm frequently wanting to essentially set them all down around me and say, okay, what are we going to do here?
that's a good point. It becomes too complicated.
Well, it's really weird. I mean, this is more inside baseball, but understand what it's like where what you'll get is the situation where I might have one charge that's a really serious charge and three or four other charges that are less serious. So what ends up happening is the one charge that I'm really focused upon is the most serious because kind of, you know, how everything follows in its wake. Depending upon what happens to that charge, everything else will find answers too. And so what ends up happening is if that case, as it works through the courts, has to get moved, all of a sudden, I've just moved something up 60 days. Now I have to work all the other prosecutors, all the other courts, all of the other judges to convince them that, look, let's push these other cases out beyond those because that's the case that needs to resolve and everything else will resolve in that global resolution you and I were just discussing.
Turning towards the case, the shooting of Winston Smith, yesterday I had Nakima Levy-Armstrong on, and she made 2 points. One, she said that the people that are investigating this were used to be the subordinates of the U.S. Marshal, which is a really kind of that can't be happening. But once again, you have this body camera image. There are so many bad decisions that happened here in this. There is a new spotlight being focused on the U.S. Marshal's actions, why they were even there trying to arrest Winston Smith in this case, because that seems to be a little odd itself. And then the fact that anyone involved here, everyone's trying to say not it in regard to who made the decision as far as no cameras. This is a mess. And, you know, you can't, especially in Minneapolis, it is shocking that any law enforcement, federal, state, whatever, they don't understand at this point, everyone's going out with every camera on they possibly can have.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When I look at this case, I think of two things. There is that camera piece of it, and this idea that people doubt law enforcement. And by the way, the law enforcement community has earned that doubt. When you start saying things, you start doing things, there is a need for transparency, and there's a reason that we have this. I think part of the problem, I'm not supporting what they're arguing, but part of the problem is what you have are multiple jurisdictions running at the same time. You got half a dozen police parts that are moving as a task force, and they all have different policies with all different standards, and so the argument is, let's just turn everything off. Well, the problem is that doesn't work anymore. There's no excuse for that. There's no justification for that. And that's one of the reasons you see multiple organizations, including the sheriff's office in St. Paul, for instance, who's literally said, we're not going to be involved with you anymore at all. There's been several others who've done the same thing until we get this issue addressed, because we're not going to put our people on the street until we have cams on. Now, there's the second piece of this, Matt, and that's the one that I think is equally disturbing, which is you get statements made by the police that are simply factually wrong. They actually release statements that say, this happened, he was a murder suspect. He was not.
No.
This is absolutely reminiscent of what we saw from the Minneapolis Police Department in the Derek Chauvin case. And so all of a sudden, what you get are these statements which simply aren't true. And then what you get, to make it worse, is you get the media jump on this, and they simply parrot what it is the government says as if the government is correct. And what you have is a dead man in the street. I'm not suggesting that the Derek Chauvin case, meaning George Floyd, and this young man are the same, because we don't know that. But what I am saying is this is part of that credibility gap that the government has, that the police departments themselves have, and that must be addressed.
And it does not, as well, you've got it, what seems to be a little bit of a war between the Biden Justice Department and this U.S. Marshal, who's a holdover from Trump, who just seems to be, you know, hell-bent on never having cameras on anything they do. And once again, I want to point out the fact that this was it seemed like a bust looking for someone to bust. Is that how they get to Winston Smith? Then I don't understand. I don't think that's how the U.S. Marshals work. Don't get me wrong. I know they're involved with a lot of local jurisdictions and local crimes, but I don't think there are beat cops out there looking for someone, a suspect on the street at a moment's notice. It's supposed to be, I thought the U.S. Marshals were supposed to be something else, and it seems like this is digressing with them into, as once again Nakima Levy-Armstrong mentioned, cowboy mentality.
Yeah, well, that's been one of the problems, frankly. Dare I say this? This has been one of the problems with the U.S. Marshals. This is not new. This is something that's been a problem for a very long time. ATF has the same relationship, a similar sort of profile, and others do too on the federal side. And so while there are some state jurisdictions that have problems themselves, Minneapolis is a perfect example, but at the same time, some of the federal ones too. But you know what happens is that there are a lot of these task forces that sort of try to work together to create something. I think it was just in Washington County this weekend, there were seven people charged with child prostitution.
That's right. Yeah.
And in fact, it was the task force involved includes the Washington County Attorney's Office, about four or five police departments who are involved in this task force, as well as the Department of Homeland Security. So in other words, you get all of these jurisdictions. I think it's a perfect example of when good intentions fail because they're trying to find a way to mesh them together. And so they drop protections in order to try to make it work. They need to find ways to ramp up those protections and transparency so people believe them and so people buy in, because that's really where we are right now. That's what we need.
One last thing, and this is a little bit of a story. I got this from Blue Stem Prairie. The Interchange Bar in Albert Lee. This is one of those bars that went against Governor Walz's shutdown orders. They of course, this is the woman that went on the lam. She was hiding in Iowa. They actually went and got her, brought her back. She filed a countersuit against the state, alleging all these things. The legal ruling came out that threw out all of her challenges because they were nonsense. And the judge was very kind to her in the rulings. He was trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. But he makes the point, he said, if you're going to claim that the government is preventing you from seeing documents, well, then I shouldn't be able to do a quick search online and find all the documents you say are being withheld from you. And he basically goes out, it's a very good, I'll post this link again a little bit later on. It's a very good argument from this judge why you need to have a real lawyer. You can't try to do this yourself. Jack, I know that there are people out there that think, oh, I can do this because they watched a Law and Order episode. But the reality is that it's such a complicated thing that if you do not have legal expertise on your side, you have a tendency of looking like a fool.
Well, and it can happen. It's like anything else. You know, I've seen people do plumbing.
Yeah.
I've seen people do roofing. I've seen people work on chimneys. You hand some of those things to me, I swear I'm going to kill myself. It's just how it is. I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to that. So the thing is that I agree with you. In fact, what the judge talked about is there's an organization called and something called Minsis in Minnesota. And essentially, it's an online system that gives you access to all of the documents that are being applied in a particular case. And they've really become very transparent in terms of opening those up. The judge actually, I think, used language saying this is sort of this legal Frankenstein-like approach. And he used the term Frankenstein, which made me laugh, because this frequently happens when other people are in the criminal system. You'll hear about people called posse comitatus. And posse comitatus is a group of people who think that the government doesn't apply to them. They don't have to pay taxes. Remember Wesley Snipes? Remember that guy?
Yeah.
He the actor? This is a guy who didn't pay any taxes, made millions and millions of dollars over years, paid nothing, and said, oh, you don't have jurisdiction over me. So he made these weird kind of crazy arguments, just like hers. And guess what? When you go to a system, to the government, and you say, you don't apply to me, now decide if you apply to me, guess what? They do. And you're going to lose. And Wesley Snipes went to prison. If anybody's shocked. Well, there you have it.
Well,
that's what this judge did, too.
Try a Google search. That's your first. Why you didn't do it, I don't know. I'll make this argument. If you need a defense lawyer, the best damn defense lawyer in the state of Minnesota is Jack Rice. JackRiceLaw.com. JackRiceLaw.com. If you want to consult, you want to talk to him about something, get in touch. He'll sit down with you and go over your problems with you. Jack, gorgeous as always. Thank you very much. We will spotlight this interview, and I appreciate the time, my friend.
Thanks, brother. And by the way, I'm glad you're back.
Thank you.
We're all watching for you. We're all watching what's going on. We're glad you're back.
Thanks, Jack. I appreciate that. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Out freaking standing, Jack Rice. JackRiceLaw.com. JackRiceLaw.com. Seriously, if you need legal advice, go talk to Jack. Fantastic. We just realized our fault with the eclipse. That's 6 a.m. Eastern. I'm not getting up at 5 o'clock. Well, the sun will be pretty close to rising at that point.
Yeah.
I think, well, on the because I'm usually up on the Iron Range for the longest day of the year. The sunrise is like 4:40 in the morning up there on the range. It's up early. But here, I think it's still about 5:15 or so. So I don't know. We might not see it. If you're up by Thunder Bay, which, sign of the cross. If you're up by Thunder Bay, that's the best chance you're going to get. It's kind of going to go over Canada mainly. But the East Coast is going to get some of it. But it's going to be early for us. We're talking about the eclipse. It's going to be a lunar eclipse. It's Ring of Fire. So it's the lunar. The moon's in front of the. Yeah, it's a lunar eclipse. The moon goes in front of the sun. Because I don't think we'd see it if the sun went in front of the moon. I think things would be really wrong if the sun went in front of the moon. Oh, no, the Earth would be in front of the moon. Okay, that's it's going. Okay, see, I'll figure this out.
Why don't we just let the U.S. Forest Service figure it out?
Come on. Why? Well, I think it's regular solar eclipse. I'll figure it out. I'm getting too many things thrown at me at once here. Needless to say, if sky get dark in morning, the eclipse is happening, then there you go. Oh, don't be afraid. And, well, or will anyone notice it because it's so early in the morning? Well, how dark will it be up in Thunder Bay? Well, my God, the sun rises up at like 3 in the morning up there. I was up in Winnipeg one summer, and I got up at like 4 because it was bright out. I'm like, what's wrong with you people? I mean, come on. This is just sick. You know, it's nice. You know, the poutine's very nice in Winnipeg. I thought that was very tasty. But no, they'll probably see it up there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Oh, this Babble Fest is brought to you by Todd Colet. Todd, of course, is a listener of AM950, moved to Spain, and likes the station, can't sponsor, you know, visit our sponsors because that's a bit of a commute. So he basically sponsors the station, and we're very grateful. If you'd like to sponsor the station, 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. Of course, Todd wants to remind you all this week that we've got the biggest fight ahead of us as Republicans try to stop as many people from voting as possible. That's all they're doing. They don't want minorities voting. They don't want Democrats voting. They don't want anyone but white people voting. And that's what their agenda is. And they're pushing it as hard as they can. Go over to leagueofwomenvoters.org, fairfight.com. I put links up on the social media. Follow both those organizations. Get involved because you know what? This isn't over after 2020. I understand. There's a lot of people that put a lot of work last year to get Joe Biden put in, but we've still got a lot of work to do. And unless we change the system, and I mean change the system for good over the next few elections, they're gonna snap it back and snap it back hard. So get out there and fight. We'll take a break. Come on back. Minnesota coronavirus update. And then we visit Nextdoor app when we come in a little bit later on this next half hour. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I can tell you one thing. I'm kind of right now on a little bit of a restrictive diet. As soon as that's over, I'm over to Hazel's. I'll be at Hazel's in a heartbeat. See you over there, guys.
Delicious food.
Yes. It's eventually I'm gonna be able to. No problem. It's not a permanent thing. I'm biding my time. Now, you know, eatlocalminnesota.com. Eatlocalminnesota.com. Stop by and visit those great restaurants. Still alive and kicking after the last year. And so they want to make sure you support those local businesses. Eatlocalminnesota.com. Hazel's Northeast, of course, part of that crew. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. COVID-19's rapid retreat continued on Wednesday in Minnesota, where reported cases and hospitalization rates fell at or below the state's caution threshold for the first time since April of 2020. Wow. That feels good, but there's still a lot of problems. And we still have people who are dying, and we still have people who are getting sick, so we got to be careful. The rate of infections with the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 has been one of 5 key barometers that Minnesota has used to assess the pandemic. At its worst in the fall, thanks to the Republican Party of Minnesota, the pandemic caused 125 reported infections per 100,000 people per day in Minnesota. That rate rose as high as 39 in the latest spring wave, but has dropped with increased COVID-19 vaccination rates to 4.3. Or is it 4? Yeah, to 4.3, below the state's high-risk threshold of 10, as well as its caution threshold of 5. Governor Walz noted the progress on Tuesday as he encouraged more Minnesotans to seek COVID-19 vaccine, highlighted a new pop-up vaccination site for travelers at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Nearly 3 million people in Minnesota have received at least a first dose, but progress towards the state goal of providing COVID-19 vaccination to 70% of the people 16 and older by July 1st has slowed. The current rate is 65.4 in that age group. Get this vaccine, Walz said. We'll bring it to you. We'll make it easy. Let's push that number above 70% and let's get back to normal. It does sound like I think that there's a question. The state fair, I think they're stopping that vaccination site. I think that is, and it's going to be pop-ups now. That's going to be the majority, I think. Minnesota Wednesday reported 8 COVID-19 deaths, 150 more COVID-19 infections, raising the total of the pandemic to 7,477 deaths. 603,144 infections, hospitalizations for COVID-19 in the state dropped below 200 for the first time since spring of 2020 to 192. The spring wave of COVID-19 activity hit Minnesota particularly hard because of the spread of the more infectious B.1.1.7 variant. The subsequent decline has been rapid in Minnesota compared with other states. According to the latest weekly federal COVID-19 state profile report released on Tuesday, Minnesota had one of the highest case rates in the nation for much of March and April, but had the 22nd lowest case rate in the latest report, which downgraded the state's viral transmission risk from substantial to moderate. I think a lot of it, too, remember, a lot of what was happening in spring was being fueled by kids' sports, and I will not ever stop to take the moment to remind everyone that of all these rabid Trump fan, anti-masker, anti-vaxxer, you know, COVID's no big deal, who cares if grandma dies, sports parents who screamed every time there was a restriction, let them play, we'll be careful, let them play. They lied. They lied, they lied, they lied, they lied. And every time we allowed them to do it, they ended up causing big problems. And this spring's entire thing, almost that entire thing, seemed to have been fueled by kids' sports. There was outbreaks in Chaska. There was outbreaks in Pine City. There was outbreaks up in Ely. There was an outbreak. Was it Bemidji had an outbreak? I can't remember. They just, you know, we had numerous school sports. And like I said, and I was hearing from parents who were saying, yeah, we'll go on out into these rural Republican areas. And there isn't a mask on in anyone in the hockey rink. There isn't social distancing. There's nothing. And you can see the people looking around going, hey, hey, what are you going to do? Well, a lot of people got sick and made it worse. So I'm going to remind you, the last people we should trust are sports parents, because the only thing that mattered to them was, let them play, not, hey, maybe we should save human beings' lives. God forbid. I will never, ever, ever allow you clowns to try to whitewash you, what you guys were chanting for, and try to turn it into something noble or misunderstood. Never. Minnesota said its 70% vaccination goal of people 60 and older just before the federal government lowered the ineligibility rate for the Pfizer version of COVID-19 vaccine from 16 to 12. Minnesota's total of nearly 3 million people 12 and older who have received COVID-19 vaccination includes nearly 2.7 million people who have completed the one or two dose series. Walls on Tuesday. Pardon me, my computer is doing what it does here. I got a new computer and it's kind of goofy. Walls on Tuesday. Am I going to get it?
This is called suspense right here.
Yeah, Walls on Tuesday. There it is. Said Minnesota, the scroller doesn't work. I need a new mouse. We'll have to get a new mouse. Walls on Tuesday said Minnesota is close to becoming the 14th state to meet the separate goal from President Biden of providing vaccine to at least 70% of people 18 and older by July 4th. Minnesota's five pandemic barometers included COVID-19 hospitalization rate, which has dropped below the state caution threshold, and the positivity rate of diagnostic testing, which is at 2.3%, well below the state's 5% caution threshold at this point. Minnesota once considered the rate of infections from unknown sources as a key indicator of its ability to contact trace to identify viral exposures and protect people at risk. However, the rate of unknown community transmissions has ballooned to 49% as the metric is no longer relevant to the state health officials. Unknown community translations. Community transmissions. I'm going to guess that's beer and alcohol related. I'm just going to take a wild guess in the dark. Not everyone we reach is willing to share freely where they may have been exposed to activities they're engaged in. So it's not a STD, you fools. Stop treating it like you got herpes, all right? You got coronavirus. Just tell us, where were you? You know, that it just is there. If that isn't the epitome of just stupid. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you I was over at Mitch's bar. I mean, nothing, you know. I'm not going to, yeah, come on. Minnesota this week fell into the wrong side of the caution threshold for its rate of COVID-19 testing, which is somewhat expected amid declines of infections and viral activity. However, the testing levels hurt the state's surveillance and ability to detect the new infections waves early. But as we are getting past it, it's getting better. So still, reminder, 8 people died. This is not over, and it's not going to be over until it is over. And so get vaccinated, please, please, please. I beg of you, get vaccinated, okay? It will make us all a little bit better. When I do return, I'm going to share something here, because I had someone ask me the question. I said, Matt, you know what the Next Door app, you know that where you kind of do the community? It's kind of like a community message board where you can kind of make comments about what's going on in your neighborhood and stuff like that. Have you seen that, Brett?
Yeah, nothing ever goes wrong with that.
Oh, and isn't it? It is a delightful experience, because sometimes it's hey, can you help me find my cat? And sometimes it's, let me tell you about my manifesto. But I, when we lost Onions and Orchids, which was such a great, I loved Onions and Orchids when we had that, and we were looking for something new in the community, I started looking at this and I decided against it. And someone actually asked me, so why don't you? Well, I'll tell you why. I pulled up a stream just from today, and I'm going to go through this stream and explain to you why I don't think this is worth any of our times, okay? Because let's just face it. It's just, you wonder where these Trump fans that have lost their leader, they've lost their social media, they're ending up on the Nextdoor app. I'll explain that in just a second. We've got a little story we're going to go through. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So a few years ago, my wife says, maybe we should, because we were trying to do some community stuff, like just in our local neighborhood, you should maybe join the Nextdoor app. It's an app. It's a chat feature. You can find your own local neighborhood, right? Brett, are you part of this?
You know, I tried to sign up when I moved to my new place. I mailed in my stuff and never heard back. And at that point, I didn't really care. So I didn't continue.
It's kind of one of those things where you basically find your neighborhood and you get alerted to stuff that's in your neighborhood, generally in your neighborhood, and a few blocks in or out. But and a lot of times it's good information. Hey, just FYI, this street's going to be closed. Oh, FYI, the recycling is going to be coming, picking up a little early this week. FYI, if someone's missing a cat, I found it. Innocuous stuff. And I was, at one point I said to myself, maybe I could use this as a replacement for the old Onions and Orchids. And I started going through this and I decided against it. And I'll explain why. You'll understand here in just a second. But I actually had a friend the other day say, well, you should do this because some of the stuff on Nextdoor is just hilarious. And it is. But what's nefarious is what the underlying elements of what's going on there, because it's quite literally, it's the place where the Trump fans who have lost their Pied Piper are kind of stumbling on there, and they just because they don't have Parler, and they can't, a lot of them have been kicked off of Twitter. A lot of them, they can't help themselves, and they're not about to try to do TikTok or Instagram because they're generally older folks. So they're stuck there, and this is where they have gone, and it's just follow along. Okay, so I just went and I took a random, this is a seriously, just a random post that I saw up on my Nextdoor app, all right? I'm gonna use first names only on a lot of these. The real idiots, I'll say, I won't share where they live, but I'll share their full name if they say something really stupid, because that's me. But I'll run through this because you're posting it on a public message board. What did you expect? And that's my mentality. Do we have any legal problems that they posted in? If they're freely posting on a message board.
That'd be a Jack Rice question. As an attorney.
I sign up, I can see it, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's on the internet, essentially. Yeah, yeah.
You expect my privacy on Twitter, do you? Do you really? All right.
You mean I have no privacy on the internet? What?
We start with actually a serious story, okay? Serious story. Marty posted, carjacking at Lund's Barley's. Just heard an elderly woman was carjacked at Lund's Barley's on Highway 7 near Hopkins Crossroads. Happened around 3 in the afternoon in broad daylight. Prayers for this poor woman. Well, that's kind of scary. I mean, I think we all can agree on that. John immediately responds, very sad. Do you have any sources for this, by the way? None of the local media is reporting this. Which you'd think they would, considering elderly woman in Minnetonka carjacked. Deepak chimed in, curious what exactly happened. I go to that store many times. Scary. Which was then followed in by Julie. There's always one person on these streams who seems to basically have, full access to all information at all time and shares it fairly quickly. Julie says, the information is correct. I am her. Now, she says the information is correct. I am her neighbor and spoke with the officer. Her purse was grabbed from her on one of the aisles as she was pushed down to the floor, has injuries on her arm, and the guy stole her car. Okay, let's stop right there. That's burglary, and that's robbery, and that's horrible, and that is horrible. That's not a carjacking. Carjacking is when someone's in the parking lot driving a car, someone comes up, yanks you out of your car, and drives away in the car. This is a crime, and it's horrible, but it's not a carjacking, so it's not correct. It's, you know, she was robbed in the store. Someone, the police located the car at Ridgedale. And let me go through this. She has injuries. The guy stole her car. The police located her car at Ridgedale after several hundred dollars of purchases were made. The guy was apprehended. The officer was so kind and caring. My take on this, the guy must have been watching her when she was entered Lund's and knew what kind of car it was. It was a luxury car, and he targeted her. And that does happen. That does sometimes happen. And it's tragic and sad, but not a carjacking. So just clarification. Teresa chimes in, was wondering how the incident started in the store and ended up in the parking lot without store employees being aware. Guess her keys in the purse, confusing. And yeah, quick question. Of course, Julie comes on back with the information. Well, I was not at the scene, but from what my neighbor said, she was in the detergent aisle. She was attacked. There was no other people in the vicinity. She cried out for help, and I'm assuming the guy left the store quickly, knew what car was hers, drove away. Yes, her keys were in her purse along with her phone, wallet. The police and the medics were called. Incident ended when police found her car at Ridgedale parking lot, and she was apprehended. So I want to make sure we understand what the crime is here. Someone walked in, followed this woman in, attacked her, took her purse in the store, robbed her there in Minnetonka. In Minnetonka, goes out, takes the car, drives up to Ridgedale, also in Minnetonka, gets arrested. They catch the guy. Great. Bust. Done. So are you following so far?
Yeah. Easy enough.
You know where this is going.
I have a feeling, but I'll listen. Yes.
Alex is up next. Oh, my gosh. Thinking about how it's a traumatic event, place to feel safe. My car was stolen out of our driveway 6 months ago, and they found in February with stolen plates on it in White Bear Lake. The thief was apprehended, pled guilty, and we sentenced this month. Minnetonka police were fantastic to us, too. Bless her. So once again, here's someone sharing a story of a crime that happened in Minnetonka, and but the car was stolen in White Bear Lake. Okay. Ann says, thanks for posting. Let us know the punishment, please. I don't think Ann understands. Now, that's just kind of stupid. I don't think she understands how the whole system works. It's not like summary judgment. Okay, they're not like hauling him around back behind the Chipotle over at the Ridgedale and you know, executing the guy. It's going to be a while before we get the final word on this.
Yeah, no Judge Dredd out there.
Yeah, exactly. Julie, we need to be aware of our surroundings. This event shows me that it can happen anywhere. Be complacent. Absolutely. Then come John Hines from Saddlewood. Where is Saddlewood? Saddlewood doesn't sound like it. Like I said, this was part of the next door app for me, which would be in the Hopkins area. Saddlewood, any idea? Is that a neighborhood or something like that? Do you know?
I can't say I don't know.
Okay. John Hines has in. Here you go. It's not surprising that crime is spreading from Minneapolis, where crimes are exploding. Highway 7 is a quick escape route, something that criminals prefer. Okay. So we have a crime that happened in Minnetonka, an arrest that happened in Minnetonka. The criminal clearly didn't use Highway 7 because they went to Ridgedale from the Highway 7. They went north from there. So Highway 7 has nothing to do with it. We have no idea where the criminal came from. We have no idea. The criminal could have come from any other community. Like, I don't know, White Bear Lake or something of that nature. It could be from Minnetonka. It could be a Minnetonka criminal. But look at how this guy immediately says, it's a Minneapolis guy. I'll take the sub story of, you know where that's going. Mm-hmm. And that it's all the crime in Minneapolis coming out here. No, it's the crime in Minnetonka that happened there. And the arrest was made in Minnetonka where another crime happened at Ridgedale. Minneapolis has nothing to do with this. You're just trying to use this crime to vilify Minneapolis, you jackass. Shut up. Then comes Edward Herzog from Glen Lake. Yes, John, the crime in Minneapolis due to the defund the police movement. What the hell are you talking about? This has nothing. The crime happened in Minnetonka. The other crime happened in Minnetonka. Is Minnetonka defunding their police?
Oh, yeah, that would go over real well in Minnetonka.
But look at these guys. Oh, this crime happened. They're defunding the police in Minneapolis. See what happens. And okay, let me take your dumb argument, Edward. If they're defunding the police of Minneapolis, wouldn't they want to commit crime in Minneapolis? Never mind. The fund the police of Minneapolis movement, its impact creeps into the suburbs too. I feel so bad for the victim. Glad the police got him. The police got him because he was in Minnetonka, not Minneapolis. Funny story. Carrie then chimes in. Carrie doesn't make a dumb statement. She just, you know, she chimes in. And 1 second here. Just got to find it here. 1 second. I love this computer. The media hasn't been reporting a lot of the gunshot wounds. It doesn't follow what people will watch and people think become complacent about it. Penetrating wounds out there. Okay, I didn't mention Carrie's last name because that's just stupid. What, there was no gun involved in this crime. So now all of a sudden you're taking a crime that happened in Minnetonka and now it's all of a sudden it's gunshot wounds. Karen, just awful. Very sad, though. John chimes in. Let's see here. Got to elect political leaders who are really honest and for law and order, who protect the victims and punish the criminals. All right. Once again, kind of stupid, but, you know, it's not inflammatory. Laura, don't use this post to spout your political beliefs, gentlemen. Many of us believe our leaders are for law and order. The issue here is was an elder targeted for a crime and our police did respond. Laura, I don't think you can argue that Minneapolis City Council support. I don't think you can argue that the Minneapolis City Council supports law and order with any credibility. I agree with you regarding our governor and some state leaders, but not Minneapolis. What does Minneapolis have to do with this crime?
Nothing.
It does nothing to do with this crime, you know, but yet here's it's kind of one of those things where here you are. It's just it's something bad happened in our neighborhood. Just bash on Minneapolis. It's just disturbing how this kind of goes, but it does not stop. This is just how this stuff goes, and yeah, then comes let's see here, John Richards from Minnetonka Mills. How soon after the suspect was arrested did they get released? Hopefully this is not a catch and release. It's not a trout, you idiot. It's not a walleye. Edward Herzog. The Minneapolis City Council has given the chief pushback on staff. What does this have to do with Minneapolis? They go on to praise. At one point, they praise Minnetonka. But the problem here is this. The crime happened in Minnetonka. And the secondary crime happened in Minnetonka. And if you still don't have a problem with it, that's fine. But all you're doing is you're going with your political tropes to just try to take anything that happens and apply it to Minneapolis because you don't like Minneapolis and you don't like the people of Minneapolis. And so you got to go out of your way to vilify this stuff. And it's just stupid. And then it gets even dumber. The Edward Herzog from Glen Lake, with all the job openings, you can work all you work. Look at the kids shot and murdered and they give excuse for the pandemic. What are you talking about? See, this is where Trump is no longer their Pied Piper. And so they go on over to Nextdoor app and they sit there. And it just becomes this, you know, oh, there was a burglary that happened in Minnetonka. I got news for you. Crimes have happened in Minnetonka. I know. And I don't sit there and say the second a crime happens in a community that I look and say, well, what community can I blame for it? But that's what these people do. So there's no value in me kind of trying on a regular basis to include this stuff because all it is just warped, broken people that just want a certain narrative to get true. And any of the facts that I just went through on this case, as I'm just reading this, none of it matters to them because they just want their reality to be true. That's just stupid. And you know what, truth? I don't have time for it. You want to go be dumb? Go be dumb. That's why I rarely go up on Nextdoor. Because when you go up there, dear Lord, just stop being idiots. Pick up a book. How about that? Pick up a book. Native Roots Radio, that's up next. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.